भर्ताय प्रतिपोषितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिथां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसन्ततामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी.
To do 39, I didn't quite finish the second line of verse 39, and then we'll go, just a few more things to say on that, and then we'll go to 40.
Shraddhavan labhate jnanam, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam, tatparasanyatendriyaha, tatparasanyatendriyaha, jnanam labdhva param shantim, ज्ञानं लब्ध्वा परां शान्तिम् अचरेणाति गच्छति अचरेणाति गच्छति. श्रद्धावान् लभते ज्ञानं तत्परः संयतेन्द्रियः संयत इन्द्रियः. ज्ञानं लब्ध्वा परां शान्तिम् अचरेण अधिगच्छति.
Last week they really worked on the first line. Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. The one who has shraddha, that one gains knowledge. It's a huge statement. Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. The one who has shraddha gains knowledge. In the end, shraddha leads to everything else. That's the idea. Here this verse says, he lists three things. The one who has shraddha gains knowledge. If that person is tatparaha, if for that person this knowledge is the main commitment. Tatparaha means this is what is primary for the person, the atma-jnanam, self-knowledge, is what is the person is about. That is what's primary for them, above everything else. Whatever else they do, it's not that human beings don't do many, many, many things. But what is their primary pursuit that trumps all other things is atma-jnanam. That's tatparaha. Then, sanyata indriyaha. And that person has to have their sense organs and their mind under control, shama, dhamma, these type of things. With that, if these three things are in line, that person, that adhikaritvam is there, the shraddha is there, there is, and they say the teaching is there, if the teaching is there, nothing will stop this knowledge from taking place. And also, just in terms of the tradition, the person who has shraddha, if that person is tatparaha, means that person is a mumukshu, means this knowledge is, they have recognized the problem, that adhikaritvam is there, they've recognized the problem, and that person has shraddha, then just in the tradition, there is nothing to stop that person from meeting a teacher, from being connected to with a teacher, because the conditions are right, the conditions are appropriate for that teacher to and student to come together. So the universe provides for that. Right? Because the when you think of the Vedanta as a pramana, as a means of knowledge, that is absolutely necessary for self-knowledge. Right? Your sense organs are necessary for knowledge within the world, but your sense organs that you have attached to you can't give you knowledge of the self. In fact, the self illumines those sense organs. Self illumines the mind. It illumines the sense organs. The sense organs are good for gaining knowledge of what is external, not for gaining knowledge of the self. Now, that means another pramana, another means of knowledge is necessary. But this means of knowledge is not attached. Your eyes are attached, your ears are attached, your sense of smell is attached. But the Vedanta pramana, the Upanishads, are not attached. So that means how they will account for this in the lore and in the Upanishads, is that when a person becomes a mumukshu, a jignyasu, ready for this knowledge, desirous of that knowledge, at that time that pramana needs to come to you. Right? The person has to be united with the pramana so that knowledge could take place. And the knowledge also, self-knowledge, is really viewed as the birthright of every human being. It's not for sale. It's what is the birthright of every human being. As soon as a person wants that knowledge, then that knowledge should come to you and should bless you. That's the tradition. It's a beautiful tradition. So that's what they say. Shraddha van labhate jnanam. The one who has shraddha, that person will gain knowledge. These things, other things, have to fall into place. The tatparaha, the adhikaritvam, the control of the sense organs, control of the mind, all of these shama, dhamma, upadhiti, diksha, all of these things have to fall into place. Right? But as they fall into place, then the conditions become right for that person to be able to gain this knowledge. So then he says, so that was, we looked at this last week. So then what, the second line, jnanam labdhva, having gained the knowledge, jnanam labdhva, indeclinable past participle, jnanam labdhva, param shantim. Param shantim, why they put the param there? That shanti is the shanti of the Atma. Param, when we say para, sometimes in para, parama, we translate this as supreme in English, right? The paramatma, the supreme self, that's a parama. But what does param really mean? Desha kalavastu aparichedaha. That's a good way of translating. Swamiji often will, when he's unfolding para or parama, desha kalavastu aparichedaha. Desha, space. Kala, time. Vastu, all of the objects, all of the things in the creation, all of the delimiters, all of the objects in the creation. Desha, kala, qualities. Desha, kala, vastu, aparicheda. That which is not limited by time, space, quality. That which is free of time, free of space, free from all objectification. That is the Atma. So now, the shantim, jnanam labdhva, having gained this knowledge, atma jnanam, having gained this knowledge, one gains that param shanti, right? That peace, that shanti, that is free of time, free of space, free from objectification, which is limitless then, right? That which is, but that which is free of any type of limitation, that is why they use this word supreme. You know, another word we can say is limitless, but that which is free from all limitations. So that's shanti, which is just abiding, free from space, free from time, free from modification, free from space. So that type of shanti, that is different. That shanti that's born of atmajnanam means the shanti itself is the atma. That shanti, that peace, is the very swarup, that is the very nature of the atma. That shanti doesn't come and go. It doesn't wax and wane. That shanti is not produced. It has nothing to do with an antakarana vritti, with any type of thought modification in the mind. So say, for instance, in karma yoga, with that Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. Ishvara Arpana Buddhi means what I do is for the as worship of the Lord, for the sake of the Lord. I take everything, the results of all my actions, as prasadam, what do you call prasada in English? Prasada. When you go to the temple, when you go to the temple and the puja is being done, and a lot of offerings are being made to the Lord, after all those offerings are made and the puja is done, the pujari then gives passes those back out to us.
That's prasada. God's gift.
There's blessings from the Lord. And so that prasada buddhi, where you take everything as just as you would take it as from the temple, the offerings that are given back to you from the temple, as being given to you by the Lord. That prasada buddhi is for karma yoga. Right? That leads to shanti. That leads to shanti in the mind. The vrittis in the mind become peaceful. Thought modifications, the stance of the mind, the way that the mind is, becomes something which is abiding and peaceful. But that abiding peacefulness that is gained from karma yoga, because the karta and bhokta, the doer, the karta, the bhokta, the enjoyer, are still there. That ajnana, that ignorance is still there. Right? And so because that ignorance is still there, the shanti is something which we gain. We gain through our attitudes and through dharma and through our sadhanas and through that karma yoga buddhi. And it is an abiding shanti. It is an abiding shanti that I gain in the mind. But that shanti that I gain in the mind is the result of my attitude, right? It's the result of my practice. It's the result of dharma, which means that if I became adharmic, that shanti would go away. If I lost that prasada buddhi, receiving everything is a gift from the Lord, as coming directly from the Lord. If all of a sudden something comes my way and all of a sudden I don't have that prasada buddhi, right? Because that's optional. Right? I don't have to have it. It's a value that I have. It's born of my value, of my understandings. That shanti goes away because it's born of the vritti. It's a shanta vritti. The atma is not a shanta vritti. This is so critical. The atma is not a shanta vritti. It's not something that you are producing. And it's not a shanti that can be taken away from you. It's an abiding shanti that is present and holding and is the very self of even the agitated mind. Say the mind has a shanti. It's very agitated for whatever reason. The param shanti, which is the atma, it is the atma swarupa, that param shanti doesn't go away. And so for the jnani, the ashanti, the agitation or lack of agitation in the mind, is kind of like the relationship between the waves in the ocean. Say there's a storm, right? There's a storm, and so the waves of the ocean are violent and extremely agitated, right? Because it's a storm. But deep underneath, there's only shanti, right? The water itself is shanti. See what I mean? There's a viveka there, in reference to your, let's just say for the moment, your internal experience. Your internal experience is the experience of your own being, the me, the atma, which is always exactly the same, always shanti, param shanti. That atma has no distance whatsoever from the mind. Whether the mind is terribly agitated like a stormy sea, or what about on a very quiet day where the ocean itself becomes just like glass. Either way, the atma is the same self, you know, the very being of the mind. The atma shanti is not coming and going, as is the surface shanti. Surface shanti is coming and going. The me, the nama rupas. Think that by surface shanti, you think, what does that mean? The nama rupas, the names, and think of it as names and forms, all of the modifications that are coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. All of those modifications, you say, oh, sometimes they're peaceful, sometimes they're agitated, sometimes they're this, sometimes they're that. But the me, my own presence, is never agitated and never peaceful in reference to agitation. It's the abiding peace that is the self of the agitation and the peacefulness. The agitation and peacefulness are opposites, with a lot of different states of experience in between. But the Atma, the self, the conscious being that I am, is the one that is abiding, is the one that lights up, that illumines all of that, and that one is still. The Jnani, having recognized the self, gains that Param Shanti. Gaining that Param Shanti, how do you gain that through jnanam? Because, through knowledge, because the Param Shanti, that limitless Shanti, is the self. It's not a quality of the self, it is the self. So in the recognition of the knowledge, gaining that knowledge, one gains that, because in the gaining of yourself, you gain that peacefulness that is not subject to change. So then he says, so jnanam labdhva Param Shantim, achirena adigachate. He gains that. Adigachate means he gains that. He gets that. Achirena. Chira means like over time. Achirena means this doesn't take time. The gaining of that is not something that takes time. It doesn't take place over time. Why? Because in the recognition of yourself, is that, right? if you recognize yourself, you recognize that. Right? So the Param Shanti is different than Shanti born of the vritti, Shanti born of the mind. Right? The Shanti, the recognition of the Shanti, which is your own being, does affect the nature of the mind. Because when the ignorance is removed from the mind does settle down. And because I'm no longer projecting my ananda onto the world and then going after it and becoming agitated and disappointed when things aren't going my way. Right? That dynamic is setting with vairagya, with my understanding, which causes an increase in that vairagya, where I'm not asking the world to do that, where I'm not asking the world to be this way or that way or this way. The mind naturally enjoys a freedom, right? There's a natural freedom that comes from that. If I'm sitting and the way everything is at the moment is just fine, I'm not asking it to be this way or that way, then my mind enjoys some peace. It's the instant I say, well, I don't really like it to be this way, I want it to be this way. Okay, then I have to engage. You know, I can still be at peace. I can say that. Even a jnani can say that. You know, this isn't quite right, let me change it. And I can still be totally at peace as long as the second part of it doesn't come along. I don't think this is quite right. I think that I need to change it so that I can be happy. The desire template. That's the problem right there, that desire template. If I see in my situation something that needs to be done just in order to make the situation better or to take care of certain problems, I will naturally do that. That's just part of the prarabdha. That's what's being given to you to do. But if you say, I need to do it this way so that I can be happy because my ananda depends upon this situation being this way and not that way, then there's going to be stress and agitation and worry and concern. Because it really isn't all right for me to not be happy. So if I've projected that onto the creation, then I have to manipulate. What if I don't project it onto the creation? What if I don't project ananda onto the creation and then seek it? What is the state of mind then? The state of mind is one that says this is fine, let me deal with it as however it is. And so there's nothing there to work up the tempest, to work up the storm. And so Ajnani's mind is much more naturally settled. But that settled mind of a jnani could be settled or unsettled. The mind by its very nature changes, right? Something could throw it off, it could be tired, it could be agitated, what could happen? But there's no buildup on that. Why? Because the self, the Param Shanti, is exactly the same. And that's what the mind is awake to. And once the mind gains that knowledge, it awakes to this Atma, it awakes to that too. There's not time involved. So Achirena, if you say very quickly, one gains this. Quickly is not the idea. This understanding, right, the understanding, this is the idea, the thing to be understood. There is no distance, there is no time between jnanam and its pala, between knowledge and its fruit, right? There is no separation. Knowledge is the pala, right? Knowledge itself is the pala, is the fruit. Because the knowledge here is knowledge of what? It's not knowledge of the painting. It's knowledge of my own swarupa. And it's my own swarupa, my own nature, which is the pala. That is for atmajnanam, for self-knowledge. Right? The pala, the result of the self-knowledge that we call moksha, is what? Is the Atma. Moksha and Atma are one and the same. Atma is the one that is liberated, is the Atma. And so if I gain knowledge of the Atma, it's not going to be indirect knowledge. It's not this kind of knowledge. The Shastra says there is an Atma. That's indirect knowledge. The Shastra says there is an Atma, and that Atma is limitless. And in fact, that Atma is ananda. That's indirect knowledge, because then you say, gee, I would like to know that. Now, atmajnanam is knowledge of that. It is the knowing of that. But now, in the knowing of that, there is no subject-object relation where the Atma knows something other than the Atma. Right? It's that the mind, right, that has taken the Atma, the self, to be other than what I am, taken the mind has taken me, the Atma, to be the mind, or to be the body, to be the sense organs, or to be Ananda projected onto the world. Right? The mind has taken me to be this. It's identified with the upadhis. So, when I gain knowledge, what is happening really? I'm only removing the ignorance that has caused me to take my being, my own swarupa, my own nature, this me, has caused me to take this me to be limited. Right? And that is the moksha, that the jnanam removes the ignorance that had caused my mind to superimpose my being onto this body, mind, sense organs, and world, and superimpose this world on my body, my mind, my sense organs, onto me, causing my mind to say, I am a limited being, sufferer of sukha and dukkha, subject to birth and death, all of these things, searching for happiness outside, all of that samsara, beating my head against the wall, trying to make myself find a situation that can give me some sort of shanti that can solve this problem. All of that type of pursuit that some would call samsara, all of that samsara is negated. Right? And if the samsara is negated, it means my mind doesn't work that way anymore, it doesn't think about the world in that way anymore, then the painful pala, the painful results of thinking about the world and engaging in the world in that way, I don't experience. I simply don't experience them because I don't engage in the world in that way. Right? I'm creating that kind of type of pain and agony by the way in which I engage in the world. If my mind has jnanam of myself, if the world is mitya, it doesn't engage in it in that way. If it doesn't engage in it that way, the type of shanti that it enjoys just on the level of vritti, the thought modifications, is going to be much different. Right? Because I'm engaging in the world from a standpoint of jnanam, not from a standpoint of ajnanam. But on the other hand, the param shanti for the jnani, for that on that level, there is no threat. Or no, let me put it this way. There is no possibility of shanti turning into ashanti. Right? But because of that, the vrittis enjoy shanti. The vrittis also enjoy it. The thought modifications also enjoy shanti. Because the self is param shanti. The mind can't be away from the self. The source of ananda that the mind seeks is the self. And so the mind enjoys a relaxation. Because even it, in its wildest moments, in its most naughty moments, it itself cannot get away from the param shanti of the self. And so that, it's a double moksha in a way. the real moksha, the one who is truly liberated, is the Atma. But I am the Atma, and now my mind discovers I am the Atma, and the mind discovers that it is the mind. I am the Atma. The mind is the mind. And the mind recognizes that it is mitya, and that itself, its truth, is the Atma. But that it itself can never be away from the Atma, can never harm the Atma, all of this. And so with all of that, the mind itself settles down. But it settles down in the recognition of the param shanti, which is my own self. Okay, so that's this verse. Such a famous verse, worthy of memorization. Let's do the next one. Agnyascha shrutatanascha, agnyascha shrutatanascha, samshayatma vinashyati, samshayatma vinashyati, nayam lokosti na paraha, nayam lokosti na paraha, Nasukam samshayatmanaha, Nasukam samshayatmanaha, Agnyaha cha, Ashraddhadhanaha cha, samshaya atma, compound samshaya atma, vinashyati. Na ayam lokaha asti, na paraha, na sukham, samshaya atmanaha. Now, having praised the Shraddhavan, the one who has Shraddha, who has Tatparaha, its primary interest is the Atma, the one who has control of the mind. He does the opposite. What happens to the other guy?
Okay. Need to go into that?
Agnyaha. Agnyaha means here the one who doesn't, who is ignorant. Here the ignorance is going to be, Agnyaha is avideka, the one who has no videka. Why? Because everybody except for this handful of people, in, you know, small number of people, everybody's an atmagnyaha. No, who knows the self? Right? Who knows? Everybody is samsara, right? It's just walking around thinking, I am the self. That's what samsara is. It's not like we're abounding in mumukshas in the world. So agnyaha, the agnyaha is the aviveki, the one who doesn't have the ability to discriminate, that person who is a aviveka, who is ashraddhana, means ashraddhavan. That person who doesn't have shraddha, who doesn't have viveka, who is samshayatma, whose mind, here atma means mind, samshaya means doubt, whose mind is always doubting. We'll see the different levels of this. It's really kind of an interesting verse. No viveka, no shraddha, okay? And the mind is a doubting mind, which then this samshayatma, this is the key word in the verse, as we'll see in the second line. He says, that person vinashyati, that person is destroyed. Vinashyati is a strong word. That person is vinashyati, destroyed. Means what? For that person, who the samshayatmanaha, for that samshayatmanaha, the one whose mind is doubting, na ayam lokaha, there is not this world. Na ayam lokaha asti, this world for that person is not there. Right? Nothing can be achieved here itself, just in this world. Then he says, na asti paraha, nor in the next world, or in, if we use paraha for the one who has atmajnanam, nor in the one that is paraha, supreme, beyond desha kala vastu paracheda, or even for the heavenly worlds, for the person, not that, na paraha. But you can take that para since it's been coming over from the previous param shanti, the one that is desha kala vastu aparichedaha, recognition of the atma. So that person doesn't achieve anything here itself, let alone neparaha, let alone in terms of atmajnana. And then says, doesn't stop, na sukham. For that person, there is no sukham. There's no peace. There's no happiness. There's no joy. Not in this world, not in the other. In na sukham, there's no happiness. This world, they don't get. The other world, they don't get. And they don't get happiness either. Who? Samshayatmanaha. The one whose mind is always doubting. So this is a very, very interesting verse. So let's look at it one by one. First of all, just in terms, say, of the mumukshu. If we take agnyaha as the one who doesn't have viveka, then for that person, we're not talking shraddha here, but if the aviveka is not there, then there's no really mumukshu tvam, the desire for liberation. Because without viveka, what is viveka? It means nitya anitya vastu vivekaha, is how we do it. Nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. There's no discrimination between the real and the real and the unreal. Between that which is timeless and time bound. That viveka isn't there. What is, for most people, that viveka isn't there. And what they mean, for the mumukshu, until they become a jnani, one who has self-knowledge, that person doesn't know the timeless, doesn't know the atma, which is Brahman, which is free of time. That's not known. But the nityatvam of this world is very much known. The mumukshu recognizes there is nothing in this creation which is not time-bound. And that being so, their mind, that understanding is key. Because if that understanding is there, the mind will make the next jump to, well, therefore, there is no way of gaining any type of a karma pola that is lasting. Right? If everything in this creation itself is time-bound, then anything that I might achieve on any level in this creation is also time-bound. Right? I mean, doesn't it make sense? So say you have the thought, oh my gosh, there is nothing in this world that is permanent. Everything in this universe is subject to birth and death. Everything is subject to change, including every part of me, my body, my mind, my sense organs, and everything that I experience is subject to change. And therefore, it's impossible. The universe cannot give me, just because of its nature, it can't give me anything which is stable or lasting. Everything will come to an end, and everything does come to an end. Every happy moment passes. Every sad moment passes too. But every happy moment passes. And so how can I work to achieve anything lasting in a world that doesn't have anything lasting? That is viveka. The agnyaha doesn't have that. And so for that person, the mumukshutvam is not going to be there. Because if that viveka, the desire for liberation, is not going to be there, because you may have a desire for liberation, but it will be defined differently. My desire for liberation will be, let me be liberated from this job and get this job. or let me be liberated from this situation so that I can get this situation. It'll be, let me do this instead of this, or let me have this instead of that. Then I will be happy. And so, for the normal samsari, I can still solve the problem just by shifting around the pieces of the puzzle a little bit differently. You know, by doing this and doing that and doing this and doing that, getting this, getting that, getting rid of that, and getting rid of that. Then I will, you know, if I work hard enough and, God willing, with enough luck and blessings from the Lord and all of that, I will get the right combination of things that I can say, all is done, all is well with me. And I will have made it. I will be a success. And I will be a happy person. And now I can rest and relax. So if people work for that, I get this, that, then I can rest and relax, all is well with me, and I'm happy. That's my definition of moksha. I've made it, right? But that's not our definition of moksha. The mumukshu says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I've realized that dream scenario is fraught with flaws, right? And it will not give me that, right? And so that is what brings a person to the mumukshutvam. Mumukshutvam means I don't have a solution. If I have a solution, I'm not a mumukshu. If I think the universe can still make things work, make me happy, give me this and give me that, no, then the mumukshutvam has not arisen yet, okay? So if it has, so that person, in terms of gaining self-knowledge without the mumukshutvam, that would be rather difficult. So that type of ananda, that person won't have. However, if they have shraddha, even without the mumukshutvam, if they have the shraddha, right, then they have shraddha in the Vedas, they have dharma, they understand dharma and adharma. They do what we call, this is right within a Hindu context here in this verse, not all the verses, but we translate them into our context. If they do the nitya naimittika karmas, in other words, they do the duties and the things that are expected of them, they do all of the proper rituals and behave with dharma, then for that person, a relative shanti they're going to have, they're going to be accruing punya, that mumukshutvam will dawn at some point. Right? So the shraddha itself will eventually, and meaning living that under that Vedic, living a Dharmic life, kind of under the, living a Vedic life, that That itself will eventually result in mumukshutvam. But until then, living a dharmic life, doing your duty, doing what is expected to you within the realm of dharma, does give some shanti, right? There's no greater shanti really than dharma, right? In terms of the relative world. So the shanti that the dharma that blesses you with a relative shanti, so that person will have some peace, and then also the peace that the Vedas themselves will provide. That type of a lifestyle, there's a certain peace that it will give. Also different heaven worlds and all of that, this gives a certain amount of relative shanti. The person who doesn't have Shraddha, right, then doesn't have that kind of spiritual container that makes order out of their experience in the universe. Just as a samsari, it gives order to the experience, and it gives a way of being, a spiritual way of being in the world, that itself is very rewarding, right? And it also gives a more longer-term shanti, because having Shraddha, you also recognize that this is one life among many, right? And that by living a dharmic life, there are better things to come in the future. They have the shanti that provides also, the Shraddha in dharma, okay? So now, say they don't have that, okay? That kind of security is not going to be there. However, still, say they aren't held within a Vedic container or a spiritual container to give them relative shanti in that way. And they don't have mumukshutvam. But, you know, they have clarity of thinking. They have logical thinking. They have a mind which is decisive. A mind that can make decisions. That can decide, I'm going to do this. Or this is the right thing for me to do at this moment, you know. Or this is what I want to study. Or this is what I want to be when I grow up. All of these, that's a big thing. These are decisions. There's a buddhi there. It's called nischayatmaka buddhi. The person is able to decide and to pursue. That is much different than the samshaya atma. A mind that is always doubting. Right? The doubting is not here just in terms of Atma jnanam, when you're with the teacher and this knowledge is being unfolded, that can be a real obstacle also, where everything that they say, well, I don't know if that's true, and what about this? Instead of being able to pursue, right? There's no decisiveness. That can be a problem in pursuing knowledge. But what about just in the world? What if that we say this verse is centered on the samshaya buddhi? Means where the mind can't make a decision. I don't know if I should do this or that. I don't know if I should study this or that. I don't know if, and Swamiji talks about it, I don't know if I should get married to this person. Because I don't know if in the end I'll be happy. I don't know how it's going to work out. I don't know if I should, take this job. Because maybe tomorrow I won't like it. I don't know if I should get an education in this, because getting an education in this might be better. See what I mean? Mind that can't make a decision. I don't know if this is right or if that is right. I don't know if I should do this or I should do that. How can a person survive? That type of mind that can't make a decision, right? How can you do anything then, you know? And so that's samshayatmaka buddhi. You know that he says samshaya atma, a mind that is totally indecisive. That person has a lot of problems. Even put aside mumukshutvam, put aside shraddha. Even that, with just that alone, there's no happiness in this world, because you can't move. You can't move forward. You can't take any risk. You can't be happy. You can't make a decision. Right? In fact, it's a big in therapy also, that's with some clients. That's a reason that a client will be in therapy. It's because they can't make a decision. It's a very painful situation to be in. And so here, he's using these three. The one who is agnyaha, no viveka. That lack of viveka stops this from me from gaining knowledge. I'm not ready yet. But if I have Shraddha, that Viveka will come. Right? Because within that spiritual container that the Vedas provide, right, the Shanti comes to the mind, and the Antakarana Shuddhi comes to the mind, and that mumukshutvam, all that it really requires, besides the Dharma, is a mind that has enough Shanti to be self-reflective. The instant the mind has enough Shanti, you know, to look around and question what is going on and who am I, right? It's punya. But it's also just having a mind that has the space, enough peace, you know, to become self-reflective. That mind will come upon this very obvious who am I question. Right? In fact, it's astounding in some ways that we put off that question for so long. You know, it's a mind blower, you know, that we can put it off for as long as we do. Sooner or later, somebody has to say, what is going on? Who am I? Why am I here? Is there any fulfillment for me as a human being? What is that? All that stuff will eventually come, right? But so, if the Shraddha is there, the mumukshutvam will be taken care of, the Shanti, a great deal of Shanti, because understanding the viveka between Dharma and Adharma is there. So that will give a lot of Shanti. Right? But even without those things, at least if the person is decisive, that decisiveness gives Shanti itself. That decisiveness means buddhi. Indecisiveness means the manas. Right? Buddhi, decisiveness. Manas, of the mind, right? Indecisiveness. That manas is where all of the emotions lie. That's where all the pain is in the manas. The buddhi doesn't really suffer from pain, right? Because the buddhi is the one who makes a decision, is objective. The buddhi brings objectivity into the situation. And so there are many people in the world that have, relatively peaceful, relatively happy lives. You know, it's relative, but nevertheless, you know, they are able to define and control their situation as much as possible. They do have some happiness. So that samshayatmaka buddhi is there, then in whatever realm you're in, see, if you're a mumukshu, problem. If you're held within the Vedas, the samshayatmaka buddhi is there, problem. If you're just in a samsari, problem. And so this type of doubting mind, you know, is problematic, and that's the where he's putting emphasis on in this verse. And so, because of that, this was just you know, when you say one of these verses, watch out for this or watch out for that, he's talking to Arjuna, you know. So he says, so Arjuna, therefore, since this is such a problem, do this. Okay. Don't let that. Don't fall that way. Fall this way. So it says, Yoga sanyasta karmanam. Jnana sanchinna samshayam. Atmavantanna karmani. Vibhadnanti dhananjaya, vibhadnanti dhananjaya. Yoga sanyasta karmanam, jnana sanchinna samshayam, atmavantam nakarmani, vibhadnanti dhananjaya. Dhananjaya is a name for Arjuna. Hey Dhananjaya. Dhanam means wealth. So the one who has conquered all sorts of wealth, just in physical wealth, and wealth in terms of name, wealth in terms of punya, wealth in terms of dharma. So the one who has made it in samsara, Dhananjaya. Yoga sanyasta karmanam, accusative, saying it's bahuvrahi. Jnana sanchinna samshayam, another bahuvrahi, accusative singular for Sanskrit people. Atmavantam, another accusative singular. na karmani nibandhanti. Says karma, karmani is in the nominative. He says karmas do not bind. Na karmani, nominative plural, na karmani nibandhanti. The karmas don't bind. They're not a problem. Karmas means all of the actions that we do in the world, all of our karmas, even on that level, all of the sanchitta karmas, all of the karmas that we have stored in our account, the prarabdha karma, the karmas that have caused us to that take this birth, all of the karmas that we accrue, all of the things, all of the actions, everything that we do, all of the activity in this world that we're engaged in on every level, those karmas don't bind us. Don't bind who? So, na badnanti. These karmas, all of these actions, they don't bind. Who? Yoga sanyasta karmanam. Bahuvrihi. The one for whom the karmas, all of these karmas, have been given up. Sanyasta. Sanyasa. Right? Renounce. All of these karmas have been given up, right? Through yoga. Remember this whole Bhagavad Gita. Sannyasa, there's the difference between the karma yogi and the sannyasi. The karma yoga lifestyle and the sannyasa lifestyle. Okay? The karma yoga lifestyle is staying in the world and engaging in your life with that karma yoga buddhi, kaushalam. A lifestyle. I still take sannyasa, I don't take the orange. I stay in the world, in my life, gaining knowledge. Coming to class, gaining knowledge, gaining this atma-jnanam, but the lifestyle is one of karma yoga, where I stay in the world, not renouncing. Or I could take sannyasa, where I renounce all of my activities in the world, take the orange, and then live basically a life just of study, meditation, study, living in an ashram type life. I don't have to be in an ashram, in a community. I don't have to be in a community. But my life is one of renunciation of everything except this study, and I wear the orange to make that statement. Right? So I've declared to the world that I am a renunciate. I am a renunciate, and these are the things that a sannyasi can do. So that's, there's the... Those are two types of lifestyle. Both the karma yogi and the sannyasi, both are mamukshas, both are studying, both are committed, tatparaha, both are committed to this knowledge, both are mamukshas, right? And both are working on their antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind, both. But two different lifestyles. Here, what he's saying is not sannyasta karma, it's yoga sannyasta karma. The renunciation of all action through yoga. Here yoga is jnana yoga. The yoga of knowledge. It brings in karma yoga because karma yoga we do for antakarana shuddhi. But it's the renunciation that takes place through knowledge. And that renunciation is the renunciation of realizing that the Atma, that myself, is not a karta, not a bhokta. The Atma, my being, is free of doership. Right? It's free of enjoyership. And that is where I become one who is a sattva karma sannyasi. Right? The sannyasi who's just simply taken on the sannyasa lifestyle in order to gain knowledge is not a sattva karma sannyasi. They're a sannyasi. They've taken that lifestyle so that they can become a sattva karma sannyasi, one who's renounced all karma. But as long as there's any kartritvam or bhoktritvam, doership or enjoyership, there's no such thing as sattva karma sannyasa for you. Because the karta is an actor, is doing. If you're a karta, you're doing. That means you're engaged in action. And so there's no possibility. As long as there's an ahankara identified, an I notion identified with the body, with the mind, with the sense organs, or the just kartritvam, bhoktritvam, if that is there, then you can't be a sarva karma sannyasi. In fact, this is not possible. If you're breathing, that's a karma. If you're thinking, that's a karma. If you're walking, if you're talking, that's a karma. Right? So there's no sarva karma. There's no possibility of being free of all karma. The only one that has sarva karma sannyasi is the jnani, the one who knows that I've never been engaged in any action whatsoever. and never will be, never have been, am not now, and never will be. Because the Atma is free of karma. The Atma is free of karta bhokta. I am not an doer, I'm not an enjoyer, I'm not an actor. The karta and the doer, the enjoyer, all of these things belong to the creation. This body belongs to the creation. Sense organs belong to the creation. My thoughts belong to the creation. My mind belongs to the creation. The ahankar belongs to the creation. It means the jagat, to Ishwara. It's all part belong to duality. There you can have this kartritvam and bhoktritvam, you know. But the jnani is the one who knows I am not that. That my being is free of that. I'm not a kartar bhokta. And so now, what Krishna says, he's saying, first of all, he's explaining, where he's winding up this chapter. There's only one verse left after this. He says, he tells Arjuna, karmas do not bind in any way at all. The one for whom karmas had been given up by knowledge, by jnana, means I recognize I'm free of karma. How can karma bind somebody who is free of karma? It's not possible. Karma can't touch me in any way. Never has touched me and never will touch me. And so such a person is free. So then he says, jnana sanchinna samshyam, that one whose doubts have been cut, chinnam, sliced, cut by knowledge. Right? Knowledge is clarity. Right? See, now, in terms of, let's look at this samshya for a minute. There's a difference between having a doubting mind and having doubts. A doubting mind is a person that can't but doubt. Having doubts, if a person has doubts, see, feel like this. Say, just in terms of this knowledge, you come to this knowledge and you have no doubts. That means you already know. You don't need to come to the knowledge then, right? Because you don't have any doubts. Either you don't have any doubts because you're asleep, you know, or you don't have any doubts because you know. Otherwise, replace the word doubt with question. You have questions. You have questions, and what will resolve the question? Knowledge. Knowledge in reference to the question. And knowledge, when we take knowledge, use the word for knowledge, prama. Prama means, I have knowledge which is true to the vastu. In other words, it's not just a cognition, it's a knowledge which is true to what I'm seeking. Like, say if I want to have knowledge about any subject, for that to be knowledge, it has to be true to the subject. It has to be true to the reality. So prama means that knowledge which is true to the reality. Otherwise, it's called mithyajnanam. It's a false cognition. Right? Jnanam, used as prama, means that the knowledge is true to reality. So here he says, jnana, you know, jnana sanchinna samshayam, the one whose knowledge, whose doubts have been cut, have been destroyed by knowledge. And so that means that this inquiry, your inquiry for understanding yourself, needs to go on until all of these doubts are leveled. You know? That is part of the teaching. When this doubt comes up, your mind has a question. The doubting mind would say, should I have this question or not? Should I have this question? Is it all right to have this question? Maybe I should have this question instead. Maybe this question is better than this question. Or should I ask this question before I ask this question? That's a doubting mind. Like that mind can't even get the question answered. Or let alone asked. A mind that has a buddhi says, I have this question. This is the question. If I have shraddha, then that means that I can pursue that question within this tradition. Shraddha means I can pursue the question within this tradition to see what this tradition, what the Upanishad, how does the Upanishad answer that question? Mm. Say the Upanishad answers that question, and then you say, all right, I understand that. what you're saying, but then what about this? That's not a doubting mind. That's a mind that is pursuing this knowledge. See the difference? It's a huge difference. And the mind has to pursue. You have to pursue until your mind says, okay, I see. And those questions are not questions anymore. The questions aren't questions once they're resolved into knowledge and you have clarity. It's not somebody else's clarity. Your mind is the one that has to say, I see. I understand that. I get it. Not somebody else can't say it for you. And if you can't say it, then you pursue. That's not a doubting mind. That's a mind, that's a buddhi that has doubts. It's very important to kind of understand this, because in the tradition, in the whole sampradaya, this, you know, guru sisha tradition has so much to do with the resolving of these questions so that I can gain clarity. Right? Clarity means I see at the deepest level imaginable. Until I can't take it any farther, and then I'm released of that. So he says, these doubts, let them be samshayam, completely. That samyat, sam, means completely, thoroughly, fully, chinnam, cut, jnanam. So let those doubts be fully removed by knowledge. And atmavantam, and atmavantam means may you have control over yourself. Your atma not is the atma, not atma which is Brahman. Atmavantam means may you be holding yourself in self, have self-possession. May you, Swamiji will say, may you be together. He likes that term. May you be together. You know, may you be holding yourself. Kind of a slang term, he really likes it. So can you be holding yourself together? You hold yourself together. Do you have shama, dhamma, upadati, all of these things? You know, in order to hold yourself. How are we doing? Let's do this verse, and I might probably go back to it next week, but just to complete, because there's not a whole lot. Tasmat ajnana sambhutam. Tasmat ajnana sambhutam. Vritstam jnana sinatmanaha. Vritstam jnana sinatmanaha. Chitvainam samshiyam yogam. Chitvainam samshiyam yogam. Atishta. Uttishta Bharata, Atishta Uttishta Bharata, Tasmat Ajnana Sambhutam Vritstam Jnana Asina Atmanaha Chitva Enam Samshyam Yogam Atishta Uttishta Bharata. He says, hey Bharata, another word for Arjuna. Tasmat, he goes, therefore, Arjuna, tasmat, therefore, ajnana sambhutam, hritstam, jnana asina atmanaha, chitva ena samshayam. He says, cut this doubt, cut it, slice it. This doubt concerning the self, atmanaha atman, atmanaha samshayam, these doubts around the Atma, the subject matter, yourself. Cut all of those. Kill them, destroy them. How? Through the sword of jnana. Remember, they're in the middle of the battlefield. Like Krishna and Arjuna are there in the middle of the battlefield. Arjuna is slumped on his chariot, thinking, I can't do this. Please teach me. I can't do this. I don't understand. It's not possible. Please give me knowledge. I surrender to you please be my guru. Please teach me. And then the Lord Krishna kind of smiles and he teaches him. We're still in the middle of that teaching. So what he says here is, hey Bharata, uttishta, imperative mood, uttishta, stand up now. Get up. And atishta, take to this. Take to this, he says, yogam atishta. Take to this yoga. Practice this yoga, this jnana yoga, this teaching that I'm giving you, and the karma yoga. So yoga, jnana yoga, karma yoga, the karma yoga buddhi, and the jnana yoga. Get up now and you take to this yoga that I'm teaching you, and cut through all of these doubts. Because Arjuna gave Krishna a lot of doubts. He told Krishna what was bothering him, and Krishna has been very systematically answering all of those things. He says, cut through all of these doubts with the sword. He's got the sword, you know. Arjuna has dropped his sword, actually. So, with the sword of knowledge, you know, cut through, you know, put an end to all of these doubts that are hurtsome, that are abiding there in your heart. But it's them. They're there in your heart. All of those doubts that are there in your heart that are hurting you, you know, cut through all of those. Those doubts which are ajnana sambhutam, all of them are born of ignorance. All of your doubts, all of them are ajnana sambhutam, they're born of ignorance. So cut through them with this knowledge that I'm giving you. You stand up now, practice this yoga with this karma yoga buddhi, which means you go out and fight this war now. You know? With a proper attitude, I'll give you this teaching, and you get up, you fight this war, you keep this karma yoga buddhi, you gain this knowledge, you know, and having cut through all of these doubts with the sword of knowledge. So that's how he ends the chapter. So he says, you have to chant this last little thing here. It's not quite right in my book. Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat. Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. Upanishatsu. Brahma Vidyam Yoga Shastre. Brahma Vidyam Yoga Shastre. Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambade. Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambade. Jnana Vijnana Yoga Nama. Jnana Vijnana Yoga Nama. Hello, what's this? Oops. I'm sorry. We have to do it over in the wrong chapter. 72.
A couple more words to go.
Okay, sorry, here we go. Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat. Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. Upanishatsu. Upanishatsu. Brahma Vidyayam. Brahma Vidyayam. Yoga Shastre. Yoga Shastre. Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade. Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambhade. Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga Nama. Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga Nama. Chaturtho Jayaha. Chaturtho Jayaha. He says, this fourth chapter, Chaturtho Jayaha, called Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. Yoga here means the subject matter, whose subject matter is karma sannyasa by means of yoga, by means of jnana. Jnana karma sannyasa. The karma sannyasa through knowledge. That's the title. It's the subject matter of this chapter, which is found in the fourth chapter in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, which is viewed as an Upanishad, whose subject matter is Brahma Vidya, knowledge of Brahman, and Yoga Shastra. Karma Yoga Shastra, which is in the form of Sri Krishna Arjuna Sambhada, in the form of the Sambhada between Krishna and Arjuna. Sambhada is that teacher-student relationship, the discussion within a teacher-student relationship is Sambhada. So that is the end of the fourth chapter. I'll refer to it a little bit next week, but we'll start chapter 5. Okay.
So. Who says this? I mean, why is this added on?
I don't know. It's just traditional. It's okay. There, but I don't know if it actually came with it or if it's added on later. I think it's probably added on later. Just take a minute. Purnamadam, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.